into sports.
20 yards out, Urch to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Well, hello there. Really good show for you this evening. Sunita Pushpure bagged a second European gold to go with her two world golds, by the way, at the weekend. She is with us at 7:30. We have Jeff Perlman, fantastic US author. He has been writing about a golden age in the Lakers' history when Shaq and Kobe under Phil Jackson won three titles in a row and they hated each other. They could not stand the sight of each other. Jeff Perlman with us after 8:00. And on the football show, is it a positive? Is it a false positive? Is it a negative negative? A positive negative? Either way, the FAI want you to know it's UEFA's fault, even when they were correct this most recent time. We will talk to Dan McDonnell and Damien Delaney. 53106 is the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. He's always negative in my book. Richie McCormack, hello.
And proud, Joe. Negative and proud.
Indeed. Mr. Positive, Nathan Murphy, hello to you.
Wow, first time I've ever been called that, Joe.
I said this last night, it's even more true now. I just think Stephen Kenny does not want anyone to knock on his door, does not want his phone to buzz, just wants to get some sleep right now.
It's insane, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe it's that, having covered the squad for the last 10, 12 years, it's been such a strange couple of weeks, not been around the players and not been travelling, and there have been such a big story, but not really been able to get anywhere near it, and just constantly waiting on the leaks and the press releases to come after midnight last night when it finally said it was a false positive. That it just all feels a little bit surreal, what's going on here, and just how big a story it is around even Stephen Kenny. These first games in charge, totally overshadowing the football, totally overshadowing the improvements, that it's just become such a mess that all we're talking about is COVID in a purely sporting sense. It had been removed, it felt, from sport for so long that these bubbles had worked so well, particularly in the Premier League. But whether it's international football or whether we're actually going to see a lot more of this when the Premier League returns as well, because the case numbers are just rocketing everywhere anyways. So naturally, you would expect more and more sports people are going to get it. But yeah, it's a bit head melting at the moment.
I suspect you were sitting in on his press conference this evening, and we'll play some of that on the football show. I got the distinct impression at one or two points, you know, when he was saying things like, look, I'm the manager, that's for our medical department to answer, that he is thoroughly fed up with the whole thing, as you might expect.
Oh, not just tonight. I think Sunday after the game was the one where he was thoroughly fed up, because I sat in on his press conference on Saturday where he made the comments about a non-essential member, and you could tell he was incredibly frustrated and, let's be honest, I think a bit pissed off at what had happened on Thursday night, that two key players end up missing one of the biggest games of his reign as Ireland manager in what turned out to be unnecessarily. Sunday was different. Sunday was probably his first real realization of what the Ireland job is about, that it's not always about what happens on the pitch. And listen, I was as guilty as anybody. I think my last question to him was, is there a future for international football over the next 3 to 6 months? And like, his answer is, like, I'm in the middle of a camp, and I did feel sorry for him, but it was the only story in town. Like, all he wants to do is sit there and talk about Jason Malumbi and Ireland's possession stats and how they progressed over the last while. But unfortunately for him, while he may see it as a sideshow, this is the main story, that two players miss a crucial game, five players missing from that match, another player missing from the game tomorrow night. So I do feel very sorry for him, because it has taken away, I think, from two pretty impressive performances. I got to say, I'm quite surprised how quickly he's got the players playing the way he wants. I know people would point to the results, to the lack of goals, but you cannot have gone to that game on Sunday and not thought, this is very different to what I've seen over the last few years.
Yeah, I'm surprised at just how quickly the players have bought into it. And different players as well. It's not just the same 11 in each game who are getting to grips with it. Different players are coming in, and not least under the pressure of Thursday night. I think it's been really impressive, and it has been overshadowed. That aspect of things has been overshadowed by the lack of goals and by the COVID situation. The other interesting thing in all of this with the COVID situation is it's probably, because it's so high profile, it has brought to the fore for all of us the volatility of the testing. You know, I mean, I suppose it's as a consequence of asymptomatic people just being tested as a matter of course. But I mean, like, I don't remember political leaders or other high profile people having false positives and then subsequently positives. And that's happened now twice in the space of a week. I mean, like, even that aspect of things, it's just laid bare how tricky this virus is.
Yeah, and I think the stats that people were going on was, what, 1 in 500
yeah.
for a false positive? So either the FAI are incredibly unlucky, which, going on recent experience, suggests they're not incredibly unlucky, or actually there's a higher prevalence. Or maybe the tests are being taken at the wrong time. So the player who was a positive, then a false positive, then a positive, may well have just picked up the virus. So maybe it was just a case that it wasn't really picking up fully what was there, and they were dead right to go and get another test, then a third test, it turned out, for the one player. But it's such a difficult situation when you look at the bubble they're in. I'm looking again today at pictures of the senior team players watching the under 21s in action in the dressing room. What looked to be 10, 12 players crowded around, no masks, everybody just sitting down. And clearly they're doing that under the instruction that we're in this bubble, so we have to accept that we're in this bubble. If somebody here has it, we're not going to be wearing masks at halftime in the match when we're in the dressing room, pre-match, post-match. So is there a reason to be wearing it now in the dressing room before training today? I don't know. I kind of think maybe you should be wearing a mask at halftime, full-time and pre-match in the dressing room, considering we now know two players within the camp have it.
Rich, thoughts on the last 24 hours? I guess you're looking at these press releases as well.
Yeah, like I'm rewriting my morning bulletin at 10 past midnight to send it out to the network around the country with all this news coming in. But yeah, like the same questions as Nathan mentioned there about the players wearing masks. They have to accept that they're in the bubble. I remember there were similar questions raised around the Liverpool squad. Remember those scenes where they're celebrating the title, watching on the game that was going on at Stamford Bridge between City and Chelsea? And none of them were wearing masks, and they all felt secure within their bubble. And I guess it's a role and it's an acceptance that this Ireland squad and any other international squad have to take on board as well, that once they're within this, and Enda Stevens pointed to it toward today, he says they have to just accept the guidance of their medical team and their doctors, and they all say do this, and they believe that the bubble is secure. There's nobody coming in and out, there's nobody interfering with it, there's nobody breaching the perimeter of that bubble, so they just have to accept that they're okay. And the other thing with this and the difference in positives and negatives and false positives and all that, like, these people are being tested more than almost any other people on earth at the moment. You look at that one player yesterday, for instance, had three tests in the one day alone. Like, if they are suffering from the virus, or if they've come into contact with the virus, or if, you know, they're asymptomatic or whatever, like, their body chemistry is vacillating so wildly within the space of 24 hours that these hiccups, given the frequency of testing, are bound to occur, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think psychologically for the players, they almost just have to live as if they can act freely within the bubble, or they would go mad. You know, I do remember even on Sunday watching, it was Shane Long and another player who's back to me anyway, they were stretching their quads together. You know, the way you lean on each other for support. And I just think psychologically, if you were sitting there with your family at home and know you're going home very soon, thinking there's a chance this guy here has COVID, look how close we are, hotels, travel, flights, I think you'd go demented. I genuinely think for their psychological well-being, maybe there's an aspect to this whereby, okay, we're in our bubble, you can act relatively normal, you don't have to be on edge the whole time. Because could you imagine what it's like if that was our workplace and you were on edge the whole time?
Have you done a trip into town recently, Joe?
I'm in town now.
I know, but you know what I mean? Like, if you've done, like, not just for work, but like around...
I was around Jervis Street Shopping Centre on Saturday, and I ain't going back anytime soon.
That's the thing. Like, that's the alternative reality that you're asking these players to live in, because, like, you know how frustrating it gets when you're going in and out of shops, you're going in and out of shopping centres, and you're outside and you have the mask off, you're inside, you've got the mask on all the time, and you're getting frustrated with that. You have to hand sanitise every single shop that you go into. Like, you can't ask the players to operate in a certain, and that's on the same level as that, because, like, it would, during a week-long camp, have them driven demented.
There's a special place in my black book for people with their noses hanging out of their masks.
Oh, nose-willying, it's called.
Nose-willying.
Nose-willying, yeah. It's where your nose flops out over the top like an appendage, yeah.
Right.
You wouldn't go around wearing your underpants with it still hanging out, Joe, would you?
Rarely.
It'd make no sense.
Not again.
It'd make no sense, Joe.
I've been told never. I've been told that's not allowed ever again. Yeah.
I think you touched on it there from the player's point of view. We should remember that two players did test positive. And we are looking at it through the prism of football and the importance of these games. Like, we don't know the personal circumstances. The FAI haven't released the players' names. And it's interesting, actually, in Ireland, and maybe this goes back to a lot of what we've noticed from rugby in recent years, they aren't releasing the players' names. Yet, in the UK, we're hearing about all the players. So in Scotland, when players tested positive, we heard the player's name. In Premier League clubs, we're hearing it. But obviously, the FAI are going a different route in terms of protecting the players. But
Premier League is case-by-case basis, to be fair.
They're going to go back home.
Clubs,
So we don't know their personal circumstances. As you say, those players, if they're going back to England, so like, do they go back to a hotel for 2 weeks? Do they go back to their families? Like, this is the personal side of it that we're not really considering in all of this.
Yeah, I'm amazed. You know, I think Stephen Kenny paid tribute to the players. I would totally echo that. I think it's so stressful. You got your family situation at home. You're going back to the UK. Like, so, you know, you're one of those players who's tested positive. You have to ring your family and say, well, I can't come home now. You know, I'm going to be, I don't know where for the next 2 weeks. Like, and it is your health and you don't know how you'll react to it. So it's really stressful. I have total sympathy for them. Not easy at all. Let's start this news round then with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made it what matters. The under-21s, Richie.
Yeah, their hopes of qualifying for the under-21 European Championship suffered a blow this evening. They lost 2-0 to an understrength Italy side in Pisa. The goals came either side of the break from two of the Azzurrini's remaining under-21s. They were Riccardo Sottile and Patrick Cutrone. Defeat means that Ireland are replaced by Italy at the top of Group 1 and sees Jim Crawford's side now in a battle to be among the best runners-up among the groups looking to qualify for the Euros.
Enda Stevens.
Yeah, the Ireland senior squad arrived in Helsinki this morning, shorn of another player, as you mentioned there, who tested positive for COVID-19. The unnamed player underwent three separate tests yesterday in the hope that his first was a false positive. The FAI revealed at midnight last night that the third and final test was positive, forcing the player to withdraw. Despite the uptick in COVID numbers within and without the Ireland bubble, Enda Stevens says the player still feels secure.
Yeah, obviously we feel safe. It's kind of our first experience with it all happening, like, I mean, club and country, but it's just something that we've been living with for the past months. And yeah, you are in contact with your club, but even before COVID was here, a club would still be in contact with us asking, is everything okay and that. But as I said, it's just something we have to get on with. It's here and it's not going anywhere soon. But we have to trust in the doctors and the staff here that they're doing their very best to keep us safe and hopefully they can.
We haven't talked much about Finland for obvious reasons. Stephen Kenny did touch on them today.
He did, yeah, and he says the game itself, he says Finland themselves provide a template to which Ireland can possibly aspire.
They're nearly like a club team in that they're very certain, very consistent in their selection, and all the players are very certain of their roles in the team. There's a very, very good team ethic, and they can play in different ways, different tactical systems. So Finland are, They've maximised their resources very, very well.
Nathan, I suppose if we're to put an importance on these Nations League games coming up, it's to do with our ranking, it's to do with World Cup qualifying starting in March.
Yeah, the draw is in December, so Ireland are pretty much smack bang in the middle between pot two and pot three. And remember, to qualify for this World Cup would be one of the greatest achievements of any Irish team, considering 13 European teams qualified, there's 10 groups, you have to win your group, or you're into a very convoluted playoff system. So Ireland don't win groups. Quite often we finish third in our group. If that's the case this time, we won't even get a playoff. So it's very, very difficult. And I think that's why it's important they end up finishing and getting that second seeding. A win tomorrow night would go a good way towards securing that. They probably need another result maybe against Wales next month as well. But a third seeding, you could end up in a situation, listen, there's always a bit of luck involved, where you get Belgium and Russia, and you have to go and somehow finish at top of a group like that. So it's an important game, as all these. As we know, Joe, all these Nations League games are of huge importance.
Correct. Two texts which go nicely side by side. Really enjoying Kenny's style of football. Tough all week, though, says Adele in Limerick. Porrig says, you two are a disgrace, saying the performances have been impressive. You're making fools of yourselves. We can leave those there. Pat says, I've now become intimately familiar with your Skype and Zoom backgrounds. Nathan's had the crayons out. Fair play on the artwork on the wall, Nathan.
I just said, the kids did that there about 5 minutes ago.
Who have we got there? That's Maradona over your left shoulder.
Maradona on my left shoulder. And then Cruyff on my right shoulder, mid-Cruyff turn. Nice. It's the battle of good and evil.
Beautiful. Where did you get the Cruyff? That's very nice.
I got the two of them together. I got them on a website, Art of Football. Oh. my wife did point out, after 6 months of me sitting in front of a pure white wall, you'd want to stick something up there.
Yeah. Oh, very nice. Very tasteful. So there you go. That's Nathan Murphy's story, Pat. Richie, you've got nothing.
I've got Lucy behind me here. She's asleep though on the bed, which isn't going to go down well because it was just changed this morning and she's come in out of the rain. So, but she's a good stage dog. She stays asleep during all this, so she doesn't provide too much disturbance.
Okay. Well, if anyone wants to donate some artwork to Richie's right shoulder, 53106, let us know.
I'm always open for a freebie.
So Cork City, I mean, look, you don't want to show favouritism. You feel like the league is better for having Cork City strong and in the league, and they're fighting relegation at the moment.
Yeah, they are, and that battle continues tonight. The bottom side in the SSE Airtricity Premier Division welcome Dundalk to Turner's Cross, where there's a kickoff at 7:45. Colin Healy remains in temporary charge of the Leasiders, who are looking to climb closer towards the playoff spot. At best, I guess they hope now at this stage, given the difference in points between themselves and ninth place. The government, meanwhile, has announced a €36 million increase in funding to Sport Ireland as part of its 2021 budget. They want to increase participation numbers and offer support to sporting bodies hit hard by the financial aspects of COVID-19. A further €7 million has been earmarked for large-scale sports infrastructure and €2 million for major sporting events.
Tim says at a certain point he had to stop pointing out to people that their noses were hanging out over their masks. It wasn't worth the strife. Yeah, I would think so. I wouldn't think anyone welcomes that intrusion, Tim, from a stranger, but I share the pain. It's hard to note sometimes, Nathan, if the nose hanging over out over the mask is a case of somebody not realising, or if they just think they're getting away with some kind of fast one.
Yeah, what are you getting away with? Like, what is the benefit?
You're breathing.
They feel like they're doing enough.
You're breathing
easier.
They
have their nose out there, yeah.
Right, yeah.
They're not getting their glasses as fogged up.
Okay, well, maybe if you have glasses. I don't wear glasses. So is that an issue if you're wearing a mask?
Yeah, it's a nightmare. Thankfully, my glasses aren't essential, so I can go about my business in the shop without the glasses. But if you were totally dependent on your glasses, genuinely is tricky. There's no easy way around that. You have to kind of, there's a lot of holding your breath. I find subconsciously, even in a shop anyway, I'm holding my breath quite a lot.
Yeah, getting in and out as quickly as you can.
Yeah, like if anyone walks by me, I'm like, whom?
Walking a penny's purple.
We're not doing any favours here for the poor retailers of Dublin at the moment.
Yeah, I know. Like it's tricky, but some of the experiences aren't good, are they? I mean, have you been out doing much? Have you been mixing?
No. I go to the... Suddenly, it's actually been the best thing ever, I'd imagine, that's happened to some of these small shops around the country. I suddenly go to my local butchers. I go to my local greengrocers. I go to all these places now that there's never anybody really in. You can go in, there's one person there, it's fine. Mm. So, yeah, but no unnecessary visits to shops.
Yeah.
Saving a fortune.
Yeah, well, apparently I saw the... where did I see the stat? I think deposits across the country have gone up from like a combined 4 billion last year to something like 9 billion this year. So people are saving a huge amount. I didn't see the breakdown of to what extent of that 9 billion you're worth, Nathan, but you're somewhere in there.
Yeah, it was a good chunk of it. Yeah,
it's a sizable amount. So Casement Park then. Oh, this has been going on forever. What's the latest?
Yeah. Well, it looks like we're actually heading in the right direction for once. It's taken a major step towards this long-awaited redevelopment. Northern Ireland's Infrastructure Minister, Nicola Mallon, today recommended planning approval to renovate the Belfast ground. It's been left idle since June 2013 and has been the victim of a number of legal and political stumbling blocks. Minister Mallon's decision has paved the way for a new 30,000 capacity Casement Park to be built.
Today, I'm announcing my decision on Casement. I'm recommending it for approval. This has been a complex application and it has been a very, very long time under consideration. I have carefully considered all of the representations and I believe that this will be a landmark stadium. It will be transformative for Gaelic Games. It will be transformative in terms of the economy of West Belfast and Belfast more generally. And I believe it will be truly transformational in sporting terms, in social terms, in economic terms for the whole of Ulster.
That's some good positive news. Ronaldo then.
Yeah, we're not alone, it seems. Cristiano Ronaldo's tested positive for coronavirus. Portugal's record goal scorer produced the result while on international duty and will miss their Nations League game with Sweden. The Portuguese Federation say the 35-year-old is asymptomatic and has already begun isolating. No further positive tests, they say, among their squad, despite the close contact nature of Ronaldo with the rest of them. We posted a photo on Instagram last night from their dinner where they're all pretty closely grouped together, but thankfully from their point of view, no extra positives on the coronavirus front.
The extent to which international football and crisscrossing the globe is viable, Nathan, is a question you put to Stephen Kenny, as you mentioned, and I don't think he had the headspace to give it a thought. He, in particular, likes to give a question, so he just said, look, I'll come back to you another time on that, basically. What's your sense, and that includes the club's reaction when their star assets like Cristiano Ronaldo come home?
I'd say give it a couple of weeks with the clubs, because this may well just be a case that cases are increasing at such a rate all over the world that we will see far more at club level as well. So we saw at Liverpool before this that both Thiago and Sadio Mane ended up testing positive and ended up missing games. So it may not be international football. It may just be that this is going to be the situation for all clubs. And I know Dan and Damien touch on this in the football show. Like, there's an awful lot of money involved in international football. We know that this collective rights TV deal is hugely important to the FAI. So they're not the only organization like that. They're taking huge hits, all these governing bodies, by not having supporters there. Mm. It's easy for us to say, well, it's not the best thing to do to have the games in November, maybe push them back till next year. But from a governing body point of view, they need those matches. They need that TV revenue. Mm. So something's got to give. And it seems as though most elite sports people and most sports people accept that money talks in this situation. And like, if the clubs are to take stand, where does that leave them when cases start cropping up in, say, the Champions League and the Europa League? You'd imagine next week when the Champions League and Europa League gets underway, they'll all be perfectly happy to fly all around Europe. I know it is the players coming together from different clubs and that, but I suspect money will talk and the games will happen.
Yeah, I suspect so as well. Richie, this dual player story continues.
Mm. Yeah, Cork Camogie fullback and Women's GPA representative Laura Tracy says she wouldn't rule out the panel striking in support of their dual players. Five Cork dual players may boycott any fixtures in the upcoming All-Ireland Camogie and Football Championships, where games are fixed to be played on the same day. A motion to facilitate dual players was heavily defeated at Camogie's Congress, following a similar proposal being defeated at the ladies' football event. Speaking to Red FM, Tracy says that the decision to boycott matches is being seriously considered.
And that is possibly something that we will have to discuss. I know, on behalf of the Cork Senior Camogie team, that is probably something that we wouldn't have a problem in doing if it is the case that that is the only way that something is going to change. It would be very disappointing, obviously, if it had to lead to that. But if that's the way that we're going to have to go about these kind of things for a change to actually occur, well, then we'll just have to go with it, and an all-out strike would be on the cards then, if that is the case.
I think they're within their rights to do this at this stage. We had Libby Coppinger of Cork on the show last night, and this is not just a COVID problem. Obviously, the schedule is condensed at the moment, but this has been going on for a number of years. Both associations shot down motions this year to, you know, ensure the future of the dual player and to do their best. That was all the motion was. We're just going to do our best for the dual player. And inexplicably, in my view, both associations shot down those motions. In Libby Coppinger's view yesterday, it just seems like there's an element of competition between the two associations, despite the fact that there's a real vibrant, still tradition of dual players across Camogie and ladies Gaelic football. And like, there was an instance, I think it's their first round of matches, where Cork footballers and Camogie team have matches against the Kerry footballers and the Galway Camogie team on the same day. And the Ladies Gaelic Football Association and the Camogie Association said that they have sat down together and that no resolution could be found to these clashes. You know, so we've sat down, this is just tricky, there's no resolution. And yet it was a simple case of the Cork Camogie team saying to the Galway Camogie team, our footballers are playing on this Saturday as well. Would you move the match to the next day? Not even another weekend. Like, they're happy to play matches 24 hours apart, which I'm not sure their male counterparts would accept at this stage. And the Galway Camogie team said, yeah, no worries, we can do that. So it looks like they've sorted it out between themselves. But we have the two associations who should be doing everything they can to help their players, saying, oh, well, there's no resolution possible. We asked both associations on the show last night. Neither made anybody available. It just seems, Nathan, like it's unacceptable. And the players, in my view, are within their rights to strike. They shouldn't have to stand for this. It's nonsense.
Absolutely. And there's been zero leadership shown from either grouping, from Camogie or from ladies football. And you're right. There's no way that a inter-county men's team would stand over this. It just wouldn't happen. But they keep getting put in this position. And like, it's a terrible shame that the main talking point, particularly around Camogie, which is always struggling a field, even against ladies Gaelic football, for attention. Aside from All-Ireland final week, it is always this that people talk about when it comes to Camogie, the clash of fixtures. I heard Sarah O'Donovan on OTB AM this morning making the point, like, maybe sponsors need to get involved. Maybe at some stage they need to come in and say, we're not happy with this sort of publicity year on year on year. But I, listen, I'm trying to figure out committees. I just cannot understand how the two associations can come together, can have the meeting, and just come out of the meeting and say, no, there's no resolution. We're going to go ahead. You've got to play the games on the same day. Like, that's disgraceful.
Yeah.
Somebody has to say, let's flip a coin. Let's do something to see who gets priority on the day. And next time around, you'll get priority. But to walk out of the meeting and say, no, the players will have to play the games on the same day. It's just, it's absolute madness.
Madness, yeah. It's unacceptable at this stage. There's a text in, I look after an under-14s team in Dublin. We have football on Friday night and then Camogie on Saturday morning at 12, repeatedly at weekends. It's a crazy situation. It makes my blood boil when I hear the 20 by 20 smoke screen, and then the reality on the ground is so different. If I tried to do this with a greyhound, I'd be up for animal cruelty. It's okay for 13-year-old girls. The boys get alternative weekends, not a problem. That sums it up. So we'll stay on the story. I mean, the Camogie Association and the Ladies Gaelic Football Association are going to have to come out very soon and justify their position and why they can't seem to sort this out when, you know, the teams with a couple of text messages managed to sort out this instance.
Well, another issue is, Joe, why... So they have got on board with the GAA in terms of the fixture list and the calendar. Why couldn't they have started their seasons a month ago, 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago? Like, their club season is very different from the men's club season. So why do they need to be condensed into the exact same time frame? Mm. They could have had this started in September and then have had it every second weekend. But for some reason, they ended up going in with the men's GAA calendar. And because of that, they've ended up in a situation where there aren't enough weekends to go around.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Although, like we said, it predates a COVID situation. This is ongoing, you know, this is not a new thing. We're pretty much wrapped up, fellas. So Nathan Murphy, thank you.
Cheers, Joe.
Richie McCormack, as ever, appreciate it. Cheers.
Stop that nose bullying, Joe.
Indeed. If you've just tuned in, I'm not explaining what he means. And coming up next, we have Sunita Pushpore, who once again has bagged a European gold medal to go with her two world goals. So we'll chat to Sunita in a couple of moments about remarkable career, really. She arrived here in 2006, had given up rowing totally and decided to do it again just for social reasons as much as anything. And hopefully next year she's headed for her third Olympic Games. So we're going to talk to Sunita next.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
The OTB Podcast Network.